And as you know, Ms. Amos is back just recently back from visiting the Philippines for the second time in the past 2 weeks. Yeah. So Justin, welcome back on your first day back here then. So she will talk to you about the situation in the Philippines following Typhoon Haiyan, and we'll take questions on the Philippines. Ms. Amos, thanks very much.
Thank you. I'll read a statement and then, of course, take questions. As you all know, it's now 2 weeks since Super Typhoon Haiyan, one of the largest storms on record, struck an area of 57,000 square kilometers with 18 million people, covering five major islands and a number of smaller ones in the Philippines. The severe winds and storm surge wiped out entire towns. Millions of people have been affected, over 5 million of them children. More than 4 million made homeless, with more than 1 million homes destroyed or damaged. The government reports today that more than 5,200 people were killed by the typhoon, and they continue to try to verify the numbers of people dead and missing as they reach communities on remote islands or in mountainous areas. A massive disaster like this requires a massive response. I've been there twice in the last 2 weeks, and I've seen for myself how the Philippines government, the Philippines Red Cross, and other national and provincial agencies quickly mounted a rescue and relief operation the morning after the storm with the support of the international community. I've seen and heard harrowing tales of desperate need and profound loss. I've also heard reports of immense bravery and heartwarming compassion. I saw how the international community pulled together with the communities and authorities to work out how to overcome major obstacles and saw more and more people being reached with basic assistance. To support the government's efforts, the United Nations and humanitarian organizations provided vital supplies, logistics teams, and equipment. Other countries gave exceptional support by deploying military assets. The Philippines has one of the best disaster management systems in the world. But the sheer scale of this typhoon and the storm surge which accompanied it in some places would have tested any country. The logistical challenges have been enormous, with many roads blocked and airports unusable in the first few days. The impact on essential services, hospitals, banks, and markets, as well as the lack of communication, fuel, transport, water, and power, made it very difficult to scale up aid as quickly as was needed. After 2 weeks, we have reached 2.5 million people with basic food assistance, over 1.1 million family food packs with rice and high-energy biscuits have been distributed. 72 local and 59 foreign medical teams are providing emergency treatment across the affected areas. Clean water is available to everyone in Tacloban City. Thousands of tarpaulins and plastic sheets have been distributed. 14 international military and 96 humanitarian partners have sent personnel, ships, and planes to help the authorities clear aid routes and distribute supplies. A vaccination campaign for 500,000 children under 5, measles, polio, and vitamin A, is set to start on Monday. A UN Cash for Work scheme has 6,000 people involved in helping the authorities to clear debris. And coordination hubs have been established in Tacloban, Roas, Ormoc, Cebu, and Guian. But much more needs to be done. Food, clean water, and shelter remain the top priorities. Vast numbers of vulnerable people are still exposed to bad weather and need basic shelter, and they're worried that the typhoon season has not yet ended. Families who have lost their homes will need substantial longer-term support from the international community to ensure they have the means to rebuild their houses. I was concerned that 1.5 million children are at risk of acute malnutrition, and close to 800,000 pregnant and nursing mothers need nutritional help. People living with chronic disease and other vulnerable groups need medication and specialist care. Emergency maternal medical care must be prioritized to ensure safe childbirth. With the breakdown of normal health services, healthcare workers are monitoring for measles, polio, tetanus, respiratory illnesses, and diarrhea. Limited fresh water supply and poor sanitation pose a serious threat of disease. Larger supplies of hygiene kits, chlorine tablets, temporary emergency toilets are needed to help prevent outbreaks of waterborne disease. And of course, women and children are at greater risk of neglect, abuse, and exploitation during emergencies. Many schools, homes, and community centres have been destroyed, and there are few safe spaces for children and their parents to find psychosocial support. Systems need to be put in place to help prevent sexual and gender-based violence in crowded communal shelters. Early recovery work to assist agriculture and fishing to restore livelihoods and get local economies moving again is critical. And people have little or no access to basic information through cell phones, internet, radio, TV, or newspapers. Ensuring disaster survivors can communicate with each other and with aid agency responders is critical. We are working with telecommunications and broadcasting organizations to get services to affected communities. The international community has demonstrated great solidarity with the Philippines people. I would like to thank all donors and all individuals for their generous support. The appeal I launched last week has now been updated from $301 million to $348 million with additional relief projects from UN and partner organizations. And tonight, music star David Guetta joins us here at the United Nations to raise awareness and funds for people affected by humanitarian crises around the world, including Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines. We hope that his support will help generate an even more generous response. Thank you all very much.
Thanks very much. If you can identify yourselves and speak into the microphone, and also please keep your questions on the Philippines. Yes, Pam, you have a question?
Yes, Undersecretary General, welcome back. And on behalf of the UN Correspondents Association, thank you for the briefing and for your work in the Philippines. My question is about this aid, what has now gone up to $348 million. How fulfilled is it? How much more do you need? And are you satisfied with the transparency programs to combat corruption from the Philippines government that was suspected or feared?
Our appeal is about 40. The original appeal of $301 million is about 40% funded at the moment. We expect the appeal amount to rise because there are still some communities that we haven't got to. We will do a major revision of the appeal for the first week of December. We have some teams out there right now doing multi-agency assessments, but you'll appreciate in the first few days of the disaster, doing those kinds of assessments was not an appropriate response. In terms of transparency, the Philippines government itself has now launched a website so that the people can see what aid is coming in. So matching our website with theirs, and of course we put everything on our website, I think will give full transparency.
Madam Amos, Errol Avdovic, I'm representing Webpublica and AA, News Service, Balkan and English Service. My question is also, if you can put a little bit more light, I've heard people were talking from the United Nations here, and you thanked the old countries now, donors. But if you can put more light on countries that are really leading the effort, and can you also tell anything if Turkey is among those countries? Thank you.
I can't remember if Turkey is on the list. I'm happy to go back and check. You have a range of help that's coming in, and we have a financial tracking service. You can go on the website, and you can see exactly what is given. Because remember that people are giving financial support, they're giving in-kind support, and they're also giving military support. So you will have seen that Japan, China, the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. I mean, these are all countries that have donated aircraft, military support, helicopters. Then there are a number of other countries. Singapore also donated an aircraft. There are a number of other countries that have given in-kind contributions. You have countries across the world, from the Gulf, Latin America, other parts of Asia, Europe, all of whom have contributed. This is a crisis that has really, I think, touched the hearts of people across the world. And in addition to what governments themselves have given, there have been substantial contributions from individuals as well.
Matthew?
Sure. Thanks a lot. On behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access, thanks for coming. I was looking at the situation report, and I just wanted, there were two things that kind of jumped out at me I wanted to ask you. One is that OCHA is saying that there's been no legislative decision taken on resettlement or relocation arrangements or in response to movement of people. What, if you could just explain, is it possible that people won't go back where they once lived, or what would you suggest? And there's also this one line about two areas where the media, most of the affected areas in Leyte and Samar provinces remain unreachable by media. Is there no local media there, or what? And where do you see as the place of that in the humanitarian response?
If I can take the second point first, I was rather concerned that there was so much focus on Tacloban and not on other places, because I think what there wasn't sufficient recognition of was that this typhoon hit five big islands and a whole number of smaller ones. So there was a kind of international understanding around Tacloban, but not about what was happening elsewhere. I think the second element of that is that the super typhoon plus the storm surge hit some areas and not others. So the greatest devastation is in places like Tacloban, where you had both. But you remember, just the wind speeds from this typhoon made it a super typhoon. So even those places that were just hit by the typhoon were very badly hit. So this week I went to three places. I went to Tacloban, I went to Guiyang, and I went to Rojas. And you can arrive in Rojas and it looks, you look down and see the devastation. But then when you arrive in the main town, it looks relatively normal. Markets are open and everything else. But as soon as you go along the coast road, it's a different story altogether. So given the geography of the Philippines, what has been difficult is for media to get to some of these more far-flung places, even local media. So local media are very much present. They were certainly there in all of the places that I went to, but I think on some of the more remote islands and mountainous areas, they have not been present. On your first question on resettlement and displacement, what you saw in the first week to 10 days, and I saw this in the first week when I went to Tacloban, the typhoon hit on Friday, I was there on Wednesday. It's total devastation. So a lot of people were waiting to leave. I mean, the crowd at the airport, just of people pressing to get on any aircraft, was significant. So people then would either go to places as close as they could, or they turned up in Manila, which has meant that because the amount of that internal displacement has been quite high, and the initial focus has been on how do we deal with the emergency, we are now concerned and working with the government on how do you support those people who may not have friends or family in the places where they have just turned up to, because they were fleeing somewhere that has been devastated. Two things that we need to therefore look at. One is, what will the government's policy be with respect to rebuilding? So we need to know as soon as possible, because obviously that helps you to think about how much investment you put in now and what impact that might have on people who do want to go back. And secondly, there are people who are saying, under no circumstances will we go back. How do you support and help those people? No, it's Philippines only.
Yes, Tim, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam. My name is Tim Witcher, AFP. You were mentioning how there are wide areas without internet and mobile phone access. Do you have any idea? And is it most of the 50,000 square kilometres without internet and mobile phones? And how do you cope with a disaster like that in this day and age?
It's extremely difficult. I mean, in Tacloban, when I made my first visit, there was very little communication. So a couple of satellite phones and one or two places that you could go to and get communication. When I went back a week later, it was much better. People could actually use their cell phones. Some of it is getting back up very quickly indeed. And we have, as you know, relations with communications companies who come in and help us to get that running as soon as possible. But in some of the more remote areas that we're still trying to reach, we're concerned that communication is not back up and running in those places. It's the same with electricity. In those places that were hit by the typhoon but weren't hit by the storm surge, they're getting they're sorting out the electricity much more quickly because the teams can come in, work, get the power lines back up. I saw that when I visited Rojas, although the more outlying communities, the more rural you got, the electricity hadn't got back there yet. But they were working as quickly as possible. So I don't have a figure to give you, I'm afraid.
Yes.
Thank you, Aruhan. My name is Yasusawa from Kyoto News, Japan's news wire service. Under Secretary General, can I ask you about what you said about the serious threat of diseases? So could you describe it a little more? What is the serious threat of the lack of hygiene, lack of sanitation, or poor hygiene, or what is coming next?
You'll appreciate that in some areas there was no clean water in the first few days, no sanitation facilities, and that's why we put such a premium on making sure that people could get safe drinking water and such a premium on making sure that people could get basic sanitation, because just the combination of those two things can lead to disease outbreaks. There's a vaccination campaign which will start on Monday. You will have heard this morning the World Health Organization official indicating that we're already seeing some measles coming through, but so far no indication of a major health outbreak, and we're hoping to prevent it.
Rick, over in the back.
Thank you. I'm Rick Gladstone from the New York Times. I wondered if you could help explain the bit of a quantum leap in the reported death toll between Wednesday and today. It was like 4,000 on Wednesday night, and now it's over 5,200. I mean, it's just a matter of counting, finding, you know, large stashes of the dead that hadn't been discovered before. And then I had one other question on the disease issue. The United States military said that it is not going to bring the hospital ship Mercy to the Philippines, that it's not needed. Is that, in what light of what you just said, is that a mistake? Is that going to be reconsidered? Thanks.
Just on the issue of the medical team, we have a lot of medical teams on the ground. A lot of countries have offered medical teams. One of the really good things is that everybody has not ended up in Tacloban. They've gone out to different parts of the affected areas. So we think we have enough medical support on the ground. And again, one of the good things is that some of the, in addition to having field hospitals and so on, there is work ongoing, working with the local authorities to try to repair the health facilities that exist on those islands at the moment. So I think it is a decision. I'm not aware of that decision having been taken, but I think it's a decision that was probably taken in consultation with the local and national authorities and probably with the World Health Organization as well. On the issue of the death toll, this is a question that has been asked time and again, day after day, and we have been very careful on this because in a disaster of this scale, you know that the death toll is going to rise. That, you know, when you have whole towns have been flattened, when you have people who have been washed out to sea, it's very, very hard to get an accurate figure, and that those early figures may well grow. There was huge pressure, not only on us, but also I saw it on the Philippines government to give a figure. My guess would be that the figure has gone up because more areas that were more remote are being reached, that in places like Tacloban, as the debris gets cleared, probably more bodies are being discovered, but not just in Tacloban, in places like Guian, which were totally devastated, and elsewhere as well. So once that debris removal really gets underway, initially the debris was just pushed to the sides of the road, but once it starts actually being actively cleared, I think more bodies will be discovered. And then there is the issue of how many people were their bodies ended up in the sea and have been washed away.
Hi, my name is Matthew from Yomiuri Shimbun, a Japanese newspaper. I was wondering if you can comment on the general nature of law and order in Philippines in the disaster area and how that's affecting humanitarian aid.
There's not been an issue for us with respect to security at all. In the early days, there were reports of looting. What the people that I spoke to saw or experienced were people who were trying to get to supermarkets and other places because they didn't have food aid. But no one in the humanitarian community that I spoke to raised a question or an issue with respect to security.
Joelle Metcalf with the Asahi Shimbun. You said earlier that the Philippines has one of the best disaster management systems and that this was just, you know, one of the worst storms that we've seen in history. But how do you think that this is going to affect improvement in disaster management, particularly for storms that may become increasingly more dangerous in the coming years?
This is something that the Philippines government already thinking about and that we will work with them on. One of the things I think that will be at the top of their agenda is the issue of information, because what a lot of people said was a lot of people were evacuated, and there was a lot of public information giving out early warning and so on. But one of the things that people didn't understand was the term storm surge, which is, I understand, the sort of technical term for what happened. Basically, it was tsunami-like, which is the term that I've been using. It's not actually a tsunami, technically, but the impact and results of it are tsunami-like, and there's a view from some that if they had used that term, for example, that more people would have understood what was coming.
I believe that's all the questions.
Thank you all very much. Thank you.
And like Ms. Yim has pointed out, there'll be an event at 7:30 this evening. Thanks very much.